The Share Pickers Podcast with Justin Waite. The content of this podcast is not intended as investment advice. It is for information purposes only. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to Macro Micro Small Cap News on Friday, the 17th of July, 2026. So I've just been watching the end of Andy Burnham's speech. Not much in there. A lot of promises, hopes, platitudes, all that stuff. You know, it's easy saying things, isn't it? It's doing them. That's the difficult bit, isn't it? When you've got the bond market on your back, you can't. That's the thing. I still don't understand that Andy Burnham knows how the money markets work when he said that initial thing, we shouldn't be in hock to the bond markets. What are you talking about? The bond markets are like 40 times bigger than the stock markets. When you are in debt, you owe money to someone, pension funds, whatever. You owe money to them, okay? You have to pay the rate they will offer you. That's it. So this is a ridiculous concept that governments can control the bond markets. It's absolutely nonsensical. Let's see what he does when he gets into power. You know, I do feel it's a lot of the same, where he's going to try and raise taxes, try and punish wealthy people, which already, that Gary Stevenson, that guy, only the brain dead believe what he's saying. He's just earning money out of brain dead people. Doesn't work. Wealth taxes never work. First and foremost, wealthy people just move elsewhere. And and they are wealthy because they're largely business people. They make decisions, you know, on a business structure. So they'll say, okay, if they're going to take sort of 2% off my assets are better located elsewhere. I get better return from there. Now, by doing that, you not only get people moving away from the country who create wealth, but it prevents people from coming in because there's better locations to allocate their assets and their capital. And just to point out, I think it's like the top 1% of the richest people in this country pay 10% of the tax. The top 10% pay 60% of the income tax. So I don't know where they get this concept that the wealthy people aren't paying their way. Add on top of that the amount of people they employ and the tax they pay. And it just doesn't make any sense. What you need to do, I mean, the only reason why they want to tax the wealthy is because the welfare state is you know, bloated beyond all comparison. And they want to pay for more for that. You've got to slim that down. You've got to lower taxes for everyone, pretty much, if you want to grow the economy. See Rachel Reeves this week was championing 0.1% GDP growth. when she was in opposition, she was criticising that. It's phenomenal, isn't it? I mean, I think she's largely posting these things for a CV now. And I did say on Twitter, I said, listen, you're about to lose your job because of your disastrous record. And you're in good company there because since you came to power, unemployment has gone from 4.1% to 5.2%. Youth unemployment is up to 16.2%, the highest in over a decade. And she came to power talking about growth and doing the very opposite to help growth, raising regulation taxes on business, which, of course, made businesses suffer, killed businesses. They started laying people off. And she still goes on about 0.1% GDP growth. It's embarrassing. It really is embarrassing. Anyway, sorry, I don't want to go into politics too much, but my politics are, you know, with a skew towards economics, hopefully, how the system works and how it doesn't work. It's quite obvious, isn't it? You know, when you put more regulation on businesses and raise the cost of doing business, they're not going to thrive at all. You know. Okay, let's look at the. So today I'm going to look at the best and worst macro cap performers this week. Small cap macro cap performers from the website shapeagainst.com. By the way. Pod, P-O-D, 40, you get 40% off. Just go to the website, scroll down, lots of information on the website, even if you're not a member about the site, about the club. And then if you just scroll down, you'll see a little title there saying, have a coupon. And just click that, a little box will appear, and type pod, that's P-O-D, 40, and you get 40% off, that's £100 off. So normally it's £249 for a year, you get it for £149, all right? And if you renew, you'll still get that 40% off for next year as well. So I'll be looking at the best and worst Small and Maricab performers this week. Quick look at the markets, indices, gold, silver, oil, Bitcoin. And I'm going to look at three companies. One, which I covered last week, which came up with a trading update, which was, I think, phenomenal trading update. I'm going to look at a new company, and I'm just going to cover off, in fact, I'll do Ramsden's now. I sold Ramsden's, and I've held it for quite a few years. I did very well out of it, you know, over 100% plus dividends. But I sold it when the takeover bid happened. It was £6. It was a recommended acquisition by the board. So basically what happens is the board say, we recommend this to shareholders. And so it's largely, you think, going to go through normally if that happens. And so I thought, well, yeah, I sold it sort of just below £6, which was the target price. And then they came out this week with the acquisitor, the people buying Ramsden's, First Cash, raised their offer price to £6.75. I thought, oh my God, what the heck? So I missed out another, what, 15%? Which is all right, but it's just slightly annoying. I've never seen that before. I don't think I've ever seen a situation where a board recommends a takeout of their own company at a certain price, and then, you know, so it's going to go ahead at £6. And then they come back again, and the offeree, or acquisitor, says, oh, we're going to increase our price, actually, £6.75. I think it was because some big shareholders got involved and said this is worth more than that. So, and listen, no argument from the company acquiring them. They just, yeah, okay, we'll go there, go for that. So, it does show. It's quite annoying how many companies have been taken off the UK market. Because I would like to have held Ramsden's for years. You know, it was a lovely business, basically cookie cutter operation, copy and paste. Every store they had was working well. If they don't, they just shut one down, or if they do, but they had, what, 170 stores, they're going to get to 330 stores. All they needed to find was the locations, and they do, you know, but the business model was brilliant. Like I said, over, since 2017, it was the management buyout, they listed in 2017, their revenue doubled from 2017 to 2026, and their profit more than tripled. So it just shows the operational leverage there. Open up these more stores, make them become more efficient. And I would have held them for years. So it's slightly annoying. I heard a stat, I think it was from FT, something like there's 27 takeouts for every IPO in UK. When you do the math, sooner or later, there won't be any companies left on the UK markets. But I suppose when you have a takeout, there's cash available, isn't it? You have cash to redeploy. And with a lower amount of stocks in circulation, then it'll have an outsized effect, I suppose. Anyway, I'm also going to look at an El Nino update again, because it's becoming even more pronounced now, El Nino. And there has been a little pullback in some of the soft commodities, but there's a reason for that. But don't be fooled by that. The big rally has not happened as far as super El Nino is concerned. The real world supply effects, that constraints that El Nino will create, has not been felt yet, okay? So don't worry if you hold one of these funds that focus on soft commodities in some way. The real play, the real movement hasn't happened. And it's probably going to start to happen between September, October, and the end of the year, when the growers, the harvesters, the farmers realize their crops are not any good, or the yield is down a lot from the previous year, and you'll see the real world effects then in the share prices of these funds. In other words, it'll go up pretty much. If it plays out, I mean, as yet, there's an 81% probability. So it's very high that a super El Nino will play out. That is ocean temperatures 2 degrees above the average. And there's some modelling saying it's going to blow past every single previous record. Let's have a look at the indices, first of all. You see, American markets are sort of going sideways, down a little bit. But these are the worst performers. The AMOL share is down minus 0.08% for the year. The FTSE 250 is up 4.41% for the year. FTSE 100 up 5.89% for the year. And I think even that, FTSE 250, if you're looking at where you put your money, and if you put in a high interest rate account, it wouldn't achieve 4.41%, I don't think. So you can see even though the FTSE 250 has been coming back a little bit recently, it's still outperforming, you know, what you get for your money elsewhere, pretty much. FTSE 100, 5.89. FTSE Small Cap overtook the FTSE 100 this week, up 6.16%. Stock 600 in Europe, 7.81%. Dow Jones up 9.56%. S&P 500 up 10.62%. And that's largely the average of what the S&P has done since 1975, in fact, since 1926. I've had figures go back to that. And it does average. So you can break it out in two bits. Between 1926 and present day, it's done about 9%. But if you look at 1975, and I think the S&P 500 only officially came into being in 1951. But if you look at from 1975 to 2026, it's done about 10% per year. And that is the average. So even with all the crashes you can imagine, like the worst of all, the Great Depression, the Great Financial Crash, dot-com bubble, all that stuff, it's still achieved an average of around about 10%, which is a cracking return. Now, you compare that to any bank, savings, and people say, oh, the stock market's dodgy. No, are you kidding? If you put your money in an S&P 500 fund, you are investing in companies many, many, many times bigger than the bank you put your money in. And what's the limit these days? What's the guarantee? You've got 100 grand, is it? Or 75 grand is guaranteed in the bank? But like I said, you know, if all those companies, and by the way, your bank is probably listed on the stock market as well. But, you know, you are investing in companies that are 100 times bigger than your bank, probably. 10 times, I don't know. Anyway, S&P 500 up 10.62%, FTSE All World up 11.05%, NASDAQ up 13.02%, and Russell 2000, which is a small cap indices, up 19.92%. So what I'm trying to say is, if you have money sitting in a high interest paying, you know, bank account, it's not safer, and in fact, it's more risky because you're earning less money. You are losing money compared to where it could be if you put it in, say, S&P 500 tracker. I mean, at the moment, I wouldn't say it's a good time to buy at the moment, but if you buy on a monthly basis, you get a good return over the long term. Like I said, 10% average annually. Let's look at the website here. Let's look at the best, worst performers this week. Okay, worst performers this week. Light Science Technologies, down 10.6%. Remember, my website just focuses on smaller micro caps. These are companies with a 300 million market cap or below that are profitable or forecast to become profitable next financial year. Right, that's what they focus on. Why? Because over 60% of the best performers long term come from that area of the market. Okay, that size, obviously with growth and good value. Active Ops, down 9.77%. And Finseta, down 9.43%. Best performers this week, S3, maybe worth looking at. These are, of course, Recruiter. And, of course, they've been under the cosh for years now due to some slowing sort of growth and GDP and all that stuff. Plus, you've got the threat of AI taking jobs. But I've seen quite a few now recruiters rallying. Is it the time to look at some recruiters? So S3, the STEM is the ticker, STEM, up 21.85% this week. Shoezone, they came out with a bit of a trade update this week. They're up 32.97% this week. And Gooch & Housecoat, they've had a taker, and again, another approach to get taken over, up 43.28%. Okay, let's look at the El Nino, because it's going to be, and the reason why I'm focusing on this is because I think it's an opportunity to hedge us against food inflation, basically, but also make money. And this is about El Nino. And if you're not sure what El Nino is, best Google it, but it's a weather pattern that has warm water going from west to east in the sort of mid-tropics, you know, Pacific Ocean, and it heats up land. Now, when it's in normal range, it's okay. You may get some crop and harvest deterioration as far as yields are concerned, which pushes up prices. Right now, there's the possibility of seeing a stupid El Nino. That's very rare. I mean, El Ninos are quite rare. They come every 2 to 7 years, but a super El Nino is super rare. So this is from India Today. They say, These are headlines from newspapers. 2026 El Nino growing into Godzilla, set to become the most powerful in 150 years. Climate models indicate 2026-27 could outstrip every event recorded since 1877. Scientists say its unusual speed and scale could disrupt weather worldwide, including India's monsoon. This is from Newsweek. Godzilla El Nino could raise food prices for years. And this is where the National Oceanographic and Atmospheric Administration, the NOAA, N-O-A-A, last week said there was an 81% possibility of a very strong El Nino. I mean, they don't say super, because they're a scientific outfit. So when media outlets say super, they mean very strong. And that's a specific measurement of the heat. It's above 2 degrees centigrade, above the average. It could be above that. So very strong El Nino between October and December. One said it would rank among the largest El Nino events in the historical record going back to 1950. And in The Guardian from the UK, super El Nino could cause global food price shock lasting into 2028, analysts say. And that's the key. You know, we've had an initial small rally of these crops, but there's still, you know, a decent amount of harvest going on, or there has been at the start of the year. So that's still coming into ports right now. So there's that lag effect, okay? Weather cycle threatens harvest worldwide, adding to inflation already fueling Iran war. And so, analysts say droughts in Southeast Asia could affect palm oil supply, a significant ingredient in processed food, while harvests of coffee and cocoa could be affected. Warmer, wetter conditions could also exacerbate the spread of disease, hitting crop yields in future years. Price shocks could reach 10 to 50% across core commodities, while the most exposed crops, including rice, palm oil, sugar and coffee, could rise by 50 to 100% or more, the bank said. The food system enters the second half of 2026 with buffers, but with little margin for error. So you're going to ask, why is cocoa, for example, the price of cocoa dropped in the last few days? Because it has, the last week has dropped. Sudden pullback is a classic case of short-term data clashing with long-term panic, triggering profit-taking and long liquidation by major trading funds. So the drop is driven by three factors, basically. Robust port arrival data. So the current crop is flowing. That's from the harvest earlier this year, of course, and late last year. There's also been some profit taken from multi-month highs. So the crops have rallied quite a little bit from their lows a few months ago. So some people are naturally taking profit off the back of a good harvest currently coming into ports. And there's the paradox of the strong mid-crop. So recent field data confirmed that favourable weather between January and May produced unusually large cocoa beans. While this heavy, high-quality mid-crop means there is a temporary abundance of chocolate on the market today, pushing prices down, pod counters, annex pod counter. What a job, eh? Living the dream. Pod counters and exporters explicitly warned that this heavy production has completely exhausted the cocoa trees. So that's a worry in itself. They're going now into a low-yield season because of Super El Nino. That'll exacerbate that problem. So in summary, don't make the mistake that the drop is a long-term trend reversal. This is a classic seller rumour but by the fact pullback, okay? Whilst the ports are busy handling the end-of-season harvest day, the structural data released by Reuters and Oxford Economics still shows that next season's core harvest is expected to collapse by 10 to 20% due to the emerging of El Nino. Our recent dips are simply a technical breather in a highly volatile market. So I have exposure to this. There's a more wide-based agricultural fund called AGAP, or Agricultural Wisdom Tree. A-G-A-P is ticker there. But I'm into cocoa, which is C-O-C-O, Wisdom Tree. Coffee, C-O-F-F. Wisdom Tree, again, is the fund manager. And, of course, sugar, S-U-G-A, is the ticker there. And that's also from Wisdom Tree. And like I said, we haven't started yet. The real effects will start happening between later on October to the end of the year, and then we'll sort of know what the impact it has on the harvest later. I think JP Morgan was saying, where did I see that? Yeah, no, Goldman Sachs said the consequences could take until the second half of 2028 to be fully realised. They reckon this could affect harvest for 27 and 28, but the prices will move way before that. So you can't wait till 2028. The price, you know, there'll be known shortages way before that, and I suspect towards the end of this year, back end of October maybe. Especially if El Nino, the data keeps coming out saying it's getting warmer and stronger. So just, you know, there's an idea there, not investment advice, just an idea. I want to look at Funding Circle. I talked about this last week, and I did say the chart was looking a bit spiky there, and it was hitting some area of resistance. What I didn't count on is them coming out with, so I said maybe, you know, wait a little bit, see if it drops back a bit, because the valuation is good here, looking at forecast numbers. What I didn't bank on is that they came up with a trading update that was amazing. Exceptionally strong. I mean, I know the company was doing well. This sort of heavily validates the capital light fintech toll booth thesis I mentioned last week. It's showing, the business is showing massive operating leverage, rapid scaling, and highly disciplined sort of capital allocation here. So let's look at the, sort of the trading update. This is for a half year, by the way. They say revenue grew to £138 million, up 50%. That is strong. Now, compared to half year 25, they did £92 million. To put this in perspective, they did £204 million all of last year. So doing £138 million in the first 6 months means they are scaling rapidly. Profit before tax hit £23 million for the half. This is an incredible beat on last year, which was just £6 million. They've gone from £6 million PBT last year to £23 million for the half year this year. Okay, and actually, if you look at it, it exceeds the £20 million they made in the entire 2025. I think that's phenomenal. Operating margins, £23 million PBT on £138 million revenue equates to 16.7% PBT margin. Last year, this was because of the FlexiPay, I mentioned the short-term thing, which they're funding themselves, which is still in development, so it's dragging on the cost of, on the margins. The margin last year was, what, 9%? Already 16.7. So they say they're aiming to get towards mid-20s, PBT margins, they're already at 16.7. So just segmenting it down a bit, term loans, they grew to 1.05 billion, up from 736 million. Assets under management hit 3 billion. Two new forward flow agreements totaling 900 million. But look at the FlexiCard and the credit card, FlexiPay and credit card, right? This is the high-velocity growth engine. I mentioned this last week. Transaction volume hit 640 million, up a massive 71%. This is the high-velocity habitual spending engine machine. It's already closing in on the 815 million achieved in the whole of FY25. Assets under management, 300 million, up from 169 million. And they've renewed the upsize, their long-standing funding facility with Citi in April. It now stands at 400 million, including Etri. Gives a massive runway to continue scaling. So unrestricted cash, 136 million, up from 101 million. And they bought back 72 million pounds worth of shares. And they say the outlook, management says H1 performance puts them firmly on track to achieve the FY 2026 guidance of at least 235 million in revenue and at least 35 million in PBT, profit before tax. I think they're going to break that, they'll beat that. I think those targets are very conservative. And to me, this trading update is basically ultimate proof of concept. Funding Circle has generated more profit before tax in the first 6 months of 26 than it did in 2025, 12 months. They've grown revenues by 50%, scaled FlexiPay transactions by 71%, built their cash reserves to 136 million, and eaten up 18% of their own share capital through buybacks. It's highly profitable, capital-like compounding machine that the wider market is still pricing like a low-growth legacy challenger bank. It's ridiculous. Do some research on Funding Circle. If you look at the NPS score, it's above Apple and Netflix and people like that. It's phenomenal. It's like 79, 78. It's a high-quality business that's scaling rapidly. It's worth looking at. Okay, and lastly, I'm going to look at another company which I think you should have a look at. It's a very interesting company, and it's called Interseed. IGP, I've always liked them, but back in, when was it? They rallied, like, where was it? So they peaked out at sort of like back in July, August 24 at 215, 220 a share. And I liked them, but that's a bit expensive. Now they're better. They're growing, their value's better, and yet they're cheaper because they had a delay in a contract. Now, I have to warn you, this was a delay. They do a lot of work with government agencies, contracts, and especially in America. And there was an argument about the budget in the House, the Senate, or House of Representatives. I don't know which one it was. But in government, between the Democrats and Republicans, about signing off on the budget. And so this, and so part of that, you know, obviously, thousands of businesses were affected by that. One of them was Interseed. There was never any worry about this contract being cancelled. It was just delayed because Democrats, Republicans were arguing about signing off the budget. And until that signed off, they wouldn't get officially allocated the spend. But it was always, it was never going to be cancelled. So it was delayed while the politicians were arguing, basically. And as soon as the budget was signed, it came back into the books. But the customer retention and loyalty is phenomenal, all right? And I'll go through this. These are five reasons why I like Interseed. And just to point out what they do, they're into pretty much cybersecurity. Interseed is a cybersecurity software company specializing in digital identities. Its innovative solutions enable organizations to protect themselves against the number one cause, remember that, it's the number one cause of data breach, compromised user credentials. Interseed's suite of products allows customers to choose the level of security that best fits their needs, from secure registration to ID verification to password security management, one-time passwords, FIDO and PKI. All right, so just explaining why I like these. So these are sort of five reasons why I like them, right? Now, if you've been watching the software space lately, you've probably heard about the SaaSpocalypse, where AIs, you know, going to make most software companies redundant, and or corporations slashing horizontal software budgets. But cybersecurity is a completely different beast. Don't lump it in with any other sort of software company that provides, you know, sort of management systems that's outside cybersecurity. You can't mess with cybersecurity, okay? Interseed specializes in high assurance digital identity and credential management. Basically, the elite lock and key systems that keep hackers out of the world's most sensitive networks. So looking at their business model, I'm going to give you five reasons why I like them, right? First of all, a rapidly growing market backed by hard stats. So Interseed are riding one of the most powerful non-discretionary growth waves of our decade. Well, it means non-discretionary. It means companies have to spend on it. It's not a question, well, should we do that or not? They have to spend on it. The global cybersecurity market is absolutely booming. Currently valued at over $250 billion, it's compounding at an incredible rate of between 12 to 14% annually, on track to get past about $660 billion by the mid-2030s. But here's the thing. Within that massive industry, identity asset management, IAM, or IAM, it's quite clever, has claimed the largest share, making up nearly 30% of all cybersecurity spend. Why? Because the legacy corporate parameter is dead. Companies have realized that in hybrid work, cloud-centric world, identity is the new firewall. Interseed is positioned exactly where the biggest budgets are being deployed. Okay, so first of all, is that growing market, and they're in the sweet spot of that growing market. Number two, their incredible product positioning against emerging highly complex threats. First, let's look at hacking, okay? With the rise of advanced generative AI models like Claude, Mythos, hackers can now discover software vulnerabilities and automate highly sophisticated phishing campaigns in mere hours instead of weeks. Because code can be dynamically exploited, standard security is failing. The absolute fallback shield has to be locking down identity access using phishing-resistant multi-factor authentication. Intercede's flagship MyID platform is specifically built for this, utilizing cryptographic keys that cannot be phished or bypassed by session tokens stealing malware. Second, there's the quantum threat. Around 2030, a date researchers are calling Q-Day, quantum computers will be, they'll become powerful enough to break standard encryption. Governments and defense networks are panicking and must upgrade their infrastructure to post-quantum cryptography. Okay, that's PQC, right now. They can't wait until a year before, 2 years before, because of course it's very complex, it has to be tested beforehand and make sure it's right. Now, Intercede has a massive first-mover advantage here, and I'm surprised by this. And this really caught my eye. You're talking about a microcap stock in the UK leading the field, okay? In the latest results, they highlighted being the first in their industry to successfully demonstrate live hardware-integrated PQC, post-quantum cryptography readiness. And this is like, this is with a partner of theirs called Swissbit. When the mass market or migration to quantum security begins, who's going to be the first to benefit from this? I'd suggest the company actually showed live demonstration first amongst any other software cybersecurity companies. So, I mean, look at that. It's like, I think that's phenomenal work from Intercede. Reason three, I love this. And this underscores a bigger point, really. Ultra low churn and highly loyal customers. So in enterprise software, keeping a customer is just as important as winning one. By the way, I think their recurring revenue is about 66% and growing. But because Intercede's MyID software is deeply embedded, it's critical to the plumbing of the system. On highly secure sites like, you know, US federal civilian agencies, the military, aerospace giants, and major banks, switching costs are monstrously high. You don't just unplug your identity management system on a whim, okay? This creates incredible sticky business. Intercede operates with a phenomenal customer renewal rate of 98 to 99%, which means their annual churn or lost customers is between 1 and 2%. Even more impressive, the average customer relationship lasts between 15 to 20 years. For investors, this translates into highly predictable recurring revenue that acts as a fortress during economic downturns. Also worth noting is the net dollar retention, okay, NDR. Their net dollar retention rate consistently sits above 100%, 102% right now, actually. What does that mean? This means even without signing new customers, they generate more revenue from their existing customer base year over year through upgrades and expansions than they lose through churn, because they're only losing between 1% and 2%. So what's number four? It just gets better than it. Listen to this. Number four. Customer satisfaction. And data here is jaw-dropping. Intercede's latest Net Promoter Score, which measures customer loyalty and their willingness to recommend the software, reached 58. To put that into perspective, the average NPS score for a B2B enterprise software company typically hovers around 36 to 41. Scoring 58 is regarded excellent and borders on world class. It tells us that their high security, high stress public sector's clients aren't just locked into accounts, they actively love the product and are supporting, backing it up. So it's always worth looking to see if companies have net promoter scores and see where they are, because that speaks volumes in itself, you know? Anyway, number five. Reason five, a bulletproof, cash-rich balance sheet. They are completely debt-free. They also hold a massive gross cash balance of 20 million net, actually, balance. To put that in perspective, their cash reserve is large enough to fully cover over a year of their typical operating expenses. They have strict internal policy where they ring-fence 50% of the upcoming year's operating expenses to ensure absolute security, leaving the rest of the cash highly active to fund organic R&D and pursue selective, highly profitable acquisitions in the machine identity space. They generate strong positive cash flow from operations, meaning they are completely self-funding and under no pressure to dilute shareholders. And finally, I'll give you another reason. High growth beats deep value. Looking forward, Intersea is forecast to deliver double-digit revenue and net profit growth from 2027 all the way through 2029, driven by the rollout of their next-generation subscription models and universal identity management. Yet despite this growth, double-digit growth, the valuation is incredibly cheap. On an enterprise value to earnings basis, the stock currently forecasts an EV multiple of 14 in 2027, and as the earnings compound, that multiple is projected to drop to a mere 8 by 2029. Yet you're getting a debt-free, cash-generative, high-moat cybersecurity leader with double-digit growth priced like a stagnant legacy business. This is why I like Interseed. The product, the customers, the balance sheet, the growth, the value, the growth of the market they're in, and within that market, they're in the sweet spot. So just check out Interseed. The only worry is it's a small company, it's quite illiquid. Like I said, when they get delays, they can have delays because they work with some big clients. Check out their client list. It's the who's who of from Department of Defense in America to everywhere, to NHS. But you can have some lumpy contracts. So when they get a delay, it can knock them. But nevertheless, I think it's a great business worth looking at. This is not investment advice. Please do your own research. That's IGP, Interseed is a company. And that's it. I've been banging on long enough. It's time for my lunch break now, I think. But listen, if you want to see more on this, then I cover it on the webinar this week. Go to sharepickers.com. If you're not a member, you can get 40% off. Just scroll down, click on the bit where it says have a coupon, type in POD40, no gaps, POD40, POD40. You get £100 off. That's £149 down from £249. And you get that 40% off every year as long as you renew. That's it. Thanks. Have a nice weekend. Speak to you next week. Much was appreciated.
The Share Pickers Podcast with Justin Waite. The content of this podcast is not intended as investment advice. It is for information purposes only. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.